I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, May the 28th, Memorial Day 2007. Well, I'm planning on a slightly delayed Memorial Day with a trip next weekend to the cemetery where my parents are buried in Niagara, Wisconsin, in far northeastern Wisconsin. My father was a veteran of World War II. My uncle died in World War II and is buried nearby in the same cemetery. My sisters and I usually make a spring visit every year to pay our respects. It's quite moving to see all the graves of the veterans marked with small American flags. It's a very moving and reflective time. So thank you to all veterans, past and present, for your service. Besides remembering the sacrifices of veterans, Memorial Day has also come to mean the start of the summer vacation season, with lots of people driving to various spots to enjoy the first long weekend of the summer.
I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert.
Well, our guest this hour has been just about everywhere, man, everywhere in the Midwest anyway, after an 11,000-mile road trip all over the Midwest. He has compiled a new book, Parklands of the Midwest, and he will be able to recommend parks that you might want to check out in Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, and seven other Midwestern states. And we also would like to know, where is your favorite park? What is your favorite park anywhere in the Midwest, and why? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. After I get off of work today, my husband and I may take a trip over to one of my favorite state parks, at least in this part of the state, Blue Mounds State Park. Probably throw our bikes on the back of the car and take a bike ride in at Blue Mounds. Beautiful scenery, lots of amenities, great biking trails, a wonderful place to spend a wonderful afternoon. Our guest, I don't think went to Blue Mounds, but went to a number of parks in Wisconsin, and we'll talk about them, and we will welcome your favorite parks as well. Dan Karcher is founding editor-in-chief of Midwest Living. He retired just this past April after 20 years with the magazine. He is author of Parklands of the Midwest, Celebrating the Natural Wonders of America's Heartland. This book is the third in a series that began with his Best of the Midwest, Rediscovering America's Heartland, and the second, Taste of the Midwest. And Dan Karcher joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
My pleasure.
So, spending a quiet Memorial Day at home, are you?
Well, I'm dividing my day. Mm-hmm. I'm at home here in Des Moines, Iowa, which is our home base, but we'll be heading up to the lake in the afternoon here, which is Spirit Lake in mm-hmm. northwest Iowa on the Minnesota border.
I didn't know you were in Des Moines. Well, you're not so far away. Well, let's talk about some of I know from the material I got with your book that you have one of your favorite parks anywhere in the Midwest is actually in North Dakota.
Well, it is. Mm-hmm. Theodore Roosevelt National Park.
Yeah, why is that one of your favorites?
You know, I love the whole state of North Dakota for one thing. It's off the beaten path and just kind of pristine and uncrowded, obviously. The people are wonderful. But in the far western part of the state are the North Dakota Badlands, which so many people are familiar with the South Dakota Badlands near the Black Hills, which are a lot more raw and rugged. But I think the North Dakota Badlands are actually more beautiful, and that's the heart of Theodore Roosevelt National Park, plus the history of this wonderful president and his kind of improbable connection with that whole area.
Yeah. You profile in this book more than 130 parks in 12 states. You did a lot of traveling to put this together.
Yeah, but to explain the logistics, I personally visited 40 parks.
Okay.
And it was about 3 per state on average. For example, in your state, I stopped briefly at Kettle Moraine, North northern unit near Sheboygan there, and then Point Beach at Two Rivers and the Manitowoc area. And then I spent most of my time at the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. So that was my modus operandi in all 12 of the states, two secondary parks and then one that I spent more time at. And then I had two wonderful collaborators, and they helped me with my roundup, which is based on parks that we've covered in Midwest Living Magazine over the 20 years that I was the editor. You could never do every wonderful park in the Midwest if you had a book 1,000 pages. But my choices were based on just showing the diversity and the range. So many surprising things in this supposedly boring region as far as things to do and types of parks and natural terrain and wildlife and on and on. It was just incredibly inspiring.
Yeah. Why did you decide to focus in on parks of the Midwest?
Well, it's such a popular topic. You know, travel is a cornerstone of Midwest Living Magazine, along with food and home and garden. But there's something that really tugs at your heartstrings about the parks and the memories you have of camping or just visiting. As you said today, you're going for a bike ride at a favorite park. And then how they depict what our states are. There's so much cultural and natural history interwoven with our parks. The Apostle Islands in your state is a good example of that, the Great Lakes component of Wisconsin and sailing and the North Woods, and all that says so much about Wisconsin. So that was kind of the idea. And plus, parks are one of those vulnerable things in budgets. I heard over and over when I was traveling that they've let people go. They can't fill a position. They don't have enough money to maintain this area or that area for national budget considerations that I'm not going to delve into, but there's less funding. And it's so sad because when we lose a park, you don't get it back. There's just too many other pressures. So I'm partly trying to rally people around supporting their parks as well.
Yeah. Are you also concerned, though, that some of these beautiful parks might be overused? In terms of lots of visitors trampling things up?
You know, I did take that into consideration, but quite honestly, I don't think we have a Yellowstone or a Yosemite in the Midwest. In general, most of the parks that I visited could stand more use and visitation. Overuse, certainly restrictions can be put on that when it gets to be a problem, but I'd love to see people visiting our parks more. There are preserves that are to be dedicated totally as natural areas for preservation of wildlife or plant life or forests. But the areas I visited were intended to have a recreational component, so I'd love to see people using them more.
Yeah. The Ashland area and the Apostle Islands area, I did a trip there last summer, and it was spectacular. We went sea kayaking in Lake Superior through the sea caves right along the national shoreline. It was just spectacular.
Well, I had the privilege of doing the exact same thing. And over the whole 20 years of being editor of Midwest Living, that was one of the areas that I'd always wanted to get to that I didn't make it to. And it was just a dream come true. And the kayaking thing got me hooked, so I'm buying a kayak for our lake place and going to keep up my kayaking skills. But there's just no place like the Apostle Island, certainly in the Midwest. It's so unspoiled. Each island has its own character. There are 22 of them. The sea caves and the geology, the lighthouses and the history of the fishing component is just a wonderful destination.
And I was pleased to read about Point Beach in your book. It brought back a lot of memories because that is a place that growing up I lived in Appleton, Wisconsin, which isn't too far away, but on a hot summer day we would go over to Lake Michigan to Point Beach.
Yep.
And it was just that was beautiful too. Of course, as a kid, I wanted to swim in Lake Michigan because it was like an ocean. It really is like an ocean, actually.
Right.
Yeah. What did you like about Point Beach?
Well, actually, you know, this as you pointed out, was my third summer road trip. And in all, in these three trips, I drove more than 30,000 miles all over the Midwest. And the first year, I spent a lot of time in Door County in your state. And that would include Peninsula State Park and some of the other wonderful parks in Door County. So this time, I wanted to highlight a little less visited, let's say, park. And what did I love about Point Beach? It's a real sleeper because, number one, there's this six-mile fabulous beach, which is just made for beach watching and watching the sunrise. And also the history of the shipwrecks offshore. I think there are 20-some. Some things are still washing up on shore. In fact, the famous Christmas tree ship wrecked there in around 1915 or something on its way to Chicago just before the holidays with sadly a number of people lost their lives. But some of those denuded Christmas trees are still washing up after all these years, 90-some years. And so that historic component is great. They have some great biking and hiking trails, great camping there. And then it's a unique area ecologically because in a very short space you go from beach to dunes to meadows to forest in this narrow slice of land there just north of two rivers.
We are talking with Dan Karcher. He is founding editor-in-chief of Midwest Living, just retired after 20 years with the magazine, and he is the author of the recently published Parklands of the Midwest, celebrating the natural wonders of America's heartland. In this book, there are more than 130 parks highlighted in 12 different states: Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. And we are welcoming your questions for him, your thoughts for him, maybe your favorite park. What is your favorite park anywhere in the Midwest and why? I know that it's on my list of things to do this summer, to visit some parks that I haven't been to before. And I hope to get more ideas from you and from our guest. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. It's At Issue with Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6, and on this Memorial Day, Ben Marins will be talking with the author of Don't Know Much About History, Ken Davis, to talk about the history of Memorial Day. That's after 4 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking about the Parklands of the Midwest. That's the name of our guest's book this hour, and we welcome the parklands that you recommend this hour at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We have open lines. Does that mean all of you are out playing in the park right now? I hope not. I hope that you will talk about some of the most beautiful scenery at state parks in Wisconsin or anywhere in the Midwest, the places that have the biking and hiking and boating or camping facilities that you think are just the greatest. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. What is your favorite state park and why, in Wisconsin or anywhere in the Midwest? Our guest, Dan Karcher, visited many parks in Wisconsin. In this book, he has the Kettle Moraine Northern Unit highlighted, also has Point Beach near Two Rivers highlighted, and the Apostle Islands National Seashore in this particular book, and also has some many other parks in many other Midwestern states as well. And maybe we should give a plug to some of the parks. Let's hear about a park in your home state, Dan Karcher, that you want to brag about.
Sure. Well, in one aspect here I want to clarify is that beyond state parks, I found that there's an incredible diversity of parks in terms of who administers them. So some of the parks I visited even were county or city parks.
Oh, great.
All the way up to the national level. And in my home state of Iowa, which is about as classic of the misconception that the Midwest is flyover country as you can get, I visited the Lutz Hills National Scenic Byway on the western edge of Iowa along the Missouri River. And Iowa is very blessed in terms of soil, as everybody knows, because we're such an agricultural state. But in the Lutz Hills, it's a very unique form of quartzite soil that was deposited by wind blowing over glaciers thousands of years ago, and it created these incredible landforms and ecosystems. And the National Scenic Byway, which was created within the last decade, recognizes this and has all kinds of great spots to hike, bicycle, camp along this 200-mile stretch of western Iowa. The Lutz Hills are perhaps like 3 to 10 miles wide, but they extend for 200 miles. They're very unique, wonderful forms of wildflowers and birds, particularly raptors use that as a flyway. And so it's a great area in my home state.
Yeah, didn't say the name of that place again?
The Lutz Hills National Scenic Byway. And Lutz is L-O-E-S-S. It's a German word for this fine windblown soil that you only find in the Rhine River Valley or the Yellow River Valley in China, to the extent that you find it here. There are Lutz soils all over the world, particularly in the great crop-growing regions. But the most pronounced depths are in these three places.
Now, our lines are full now with the listeners. Eugene in Viola is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to put a plug in for the Kickapoo Valley Reserve, which is about 2 miles north of Lafarge. It's about 8 miles north of the village of Viola. There's 8,500 acres up there, and it's just plain gorgeous in the summertime. You can canoe from Ontario down to Rockton, and that's just plain beautiful. And they've also got bike trails in there, and the camping is rough, but there's a lot of artesian wells and springs for fresh water. And to give you an idea, when I was a child growing up here, from the village of Viola, north to Ontario, Wisconsin, is 18 miles, and you cross the Kickapoo River 15 times. There were 15 bridges on the river. They bought up the land, I think, a number of years ago. They were going to build a dam up there, and they discontinued that. Then a few years ago, the state of Wisconsin bought the land and turned it into a reserve. And then north of that, you've got Wildcat Mountain State Park. But I think to get into Wildcat Mountain, you've got to have reservations. Then there's also a small park here in the village of Viola that's right on the river. It's plain beautiful for camping. It's just beautiful for camping and quiet, pretty much. But that you get up on that reserve, and you can get. They also run programs during the year. And for instance, 1st of July, they're going to have a heritage program there at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve Office. And in the last winter, they had an archaeologist put on a program, and he told us that this valley is about 20, 25 miles wide and about 125 miles long from Wilton down to Waseca. And he told us from the year 1250 to 1850, there wasn't anybody living here because the deer were up north and the buffalo were south, and it wouldn't support after the mound builders left here. So there's just all kinds of Indian mounds in here, Native American mounds. Because it wouldn't support anybody.
Eugene, thank you so much. You're really a great promoter of the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. Dan Karcher, any reaction?
Well, I just think your caller identified some of the reasons people get so passionate about parks. Obviously, there's a sense of local pride there. But also, as was pointed out, the historic as well as natural connections to the parks, there's just so much to be learned culturally, and then the fun of camping. You people in Wisconsin are so darn lucky when it comes to just the broad variety of terrain you have there, with the forests up north, the Great Lakes connection, both to Superior, which is obviously where the Apostles are located, and then more notably to Lake Michigan, and then the unique glacial terrain, which not every state experiences. If I'm remembering correctly, it's only the southwest corner of Wisconsin that wasn't altered by the glaciers, which is why I went to the northern unit of Kettle Moraine there to see things like eskers and canes and drumlins and all that stuff I read about in school.
Yeah, in fact, you gave me a reminder of what all those things were when in your book. You can the Thank you again, Eugene, for the call. You know, Eugene brought up Indian Mounds, too. I suspect Indian Mounds play a big part in a lot of parklands in the Midwest.
Well, yeah, gosh, going right back to the early days of our history, pre-European settlement, especially out in the Great Plains states, too. In North Dakota, again, on one of my trips, I was at Knife River Indian Villages, which is where Lewis and Clark met up with, they call her Sacagawea, we call her Sacagawea.
All right.
But those mounds there are perfectly preserved, and what's not recognized is how civilized those first peoples were. There were thousands of people living in that area in the middle of North Dakota in what I would call a commercial hub for the Plains Indians. And you find that in other locales along the Ohio River and the Mississippi and Wisconsin, all over the Midwest.
Next, we go to Jennifer in Milwaukee. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, good morning. I'm actually calling to talk about Backbone State Park in northeast Iowa, which is near where I grew up. It's got a lot to offer in the summer and also in the wintertime. Great cross-country ski trails, good horseback riding trails. They have a beach, lots of biking and hiking trails, and originally part of the CCT program back in the 30s. So I didn't know if the author had written anything about Backbone.
Say the name of the park again. I'm sorry, your connection is kind of fuzzy.
Backbone State Park.
Backbone. Backbone State Park. Okay. Have you, were you there?
Backbone State Park in our home state of Iowa here that Midwest Living is based in Des Moines with Meredith Corporation. But it certainly has appeared in our magazine. I went close to there to a place your caller might recognize, Yellow River State Forest in Iowa, which is on the western bank of the Mississippi across from Prairie du Chien in that area in your state. And it's a wonderful state forest full of hardwoods and glens and places to camp and hike. And, again, Native American history indicated by petroglyphs that are carved into the cliff faces overlooking the Mississippi. So I got to that general area. And your caller prompts me to comment again that Iowa is an interesting state in that I guess you'd say the land between the two coasts, so to speak, of Iowa, the Mississippi and the Missouri, is the stereotypical Iowa. It's such an incredibly productive state agriculturally that a lot of the native prairies have been lost and savannas to agricultural production, more so than any other state in the nation. But those two sides of Iowa, if you will, where I visited Yellow River State Forest on the Mississippi and then the Lus Hills in western Iowa on the Missouri, are a very rugged topographically with lots of different wildlife and trees and wildflowers. So it's really fun to defy the stereotypes about the Midwest in general or states like Iowa with our parks.
We're bragging about the state parks and the state forests and the other parklands of the Midwest with our guest, Dan Karcher, who visited a whole bunch of these parks over the Midwest last summer as a part of an 11,000-mile road trip. And he can recommend parks you might want to check out in Wisconsin and Iowa, Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, and seven other Midwestern states. And I'd like to hear from you, too, if you know of a park in Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois. We haven't talked about any there yet. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or your favorite park or parkland or state forest anywhere in the Midwest. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Gloria in Madison is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
I love the idea that he talked about, not just state parks, but state parks. I'm from Two Rivers, 74 years old, so I grew up right along Lake Michigan. And I hope you don't mind if I say a couple of the things that was fun about Lake Michigan. We could go down to the beach and roast potatoes and at night by a fire and run into the water and get really cold and then come back out and lay in the hot sand. And Two Rivers there now is the Neshota Park, which is more developed than that when I was young. And, of course, Point Beach was a place you traveled. It was kind of a longer trip in those days in our little Model A Ford, I think it was. But one of the things I'd love to tell you about, if you don't mind, is that my dad was born in 1908. on April 23rd. And one of the letters that Carl Sandburg wrote to his soon-to-be wife was that he was walking along the beach in Two Rivers, and he talked about the water washing up to the beach and like little soldiers marching. And later on, he wrote a poem, something like that. So it was always kind of important to me, Carl Sandburg, his connection with Lake Michigan and Two Rivers, and I just wanted to share that bit of history.
Oh, I'm glad you did. I didn't realize there was that connection.
Yes,
cool. Dan Kircher?
Well, I'm very glad to hear about that, and I'll have to get online and look up the poem. But certainly, I walked along that beach area, and it is spectacular. And again, you know, you always overlook what's in your own backyard. I told you before how lucky you people are in Wisconsin, but the communities all up and down that lakeshore of Lake Michigan have done such a great job of developing their marinas and bicycle paths and hiking paths and beaches. And I really have this chauvinistic streak, obviously, about the Midwest. I think people from other parts of the country, especially people I worked with in Los Angeles and New York, for example, over the years, are just shocked when we bring them to the Midwest and they see that we have these virtual oceans right here in our region in the form of the Great Lakes with all the beaches. It's just a phenomenon.
Yeah. On the other side of the pond of Lake Michigan, you did visit a park that I saw. I visited a couple of summers ago. It's another spectacular. Is it Great Dunes or
Sleeping Bear Dunes?
Sleeping Bear Dunes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gosh, I just love that place and have been back to it with my wife and my family over the years several times. But if you haven't seen it, you just have no idea of the enormity of these dunes that are hundreds of feet tall. They're called perch dunes, which means they formed on top of glacial rubble, but they look like a giant sand dune from down below. Hiking them can be a real challenge. Michigan, and again, it's a national lakeshore, Sleeping Bear Dunes, has done such a great job. I think it's about directly opposite Door County.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have some wonderful offshore islands, the Manitous, which can only be visited by boat at certain times of the year. But that lighthouse keeper history and the shipping history of when the Great Lakes was all being developed for commercial purposes and all that is there. So Sleeping Bear Dunes, I'd highly recommend. It's not that far from Traverse City and that whole wonderful resort area up there in northwest lower Michigan.
Yeah. I think you have the Porcupine Mountains in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan highlighted in your book, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The route that I took for that segment of my trip, we entered Michigan after visiting Indiana Dunes right near Chicago, went up to Sleeping Bear Dunes, crossed Mackinac, and then visited several parks in the Upper Peninsula, and then just had the best time in what's called the Porkies.
Mm-hmm. I almost said the Porkies. It took me a second to remember.
You know,
yeah.
I just love it because you never forget it. But talk about a rugged wilderness area right in the Midwest. I mean, that is it. Our guide was a woman who had a bear hunting license and was telling us about her bear hunting adventures. And there's one spot in particular in the Porkies called Lake of the Clouds, which I bet a lot of your listeners have visited. And it is unbelievable. It's a long sliver of a lake that overlooks, in parts, Lake Superior, but you're way up in the Porcupine Mountains. And once again, talk about defying the stereotypes. Anybody that thinks the Midwest is flat, they haven't seen the Porkies, they haven't seen the Black Hills, they haven't seen a lot of areas within our region that are very rugged like that.
Well, we'll travel to other states as well and other parks, but first let's take a couple more calls. Kathleen in Menominee, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Jean. Good morning, Dan. I agree that we are very lucky people here in Wisconsin. My favorite park in Wisconsin is Interstate, the Wisconsin side of Interstate Park. It's up on Highway 8 near St. Croix Falls. There is so much to do there. There's woods and beach. There's hiking. There's a great trail they have there called the Hot... Oh, I don't remember now the name of it. But it's because of the glaciers that came through, the potholes.
Mm-hmm.
The pothole trail, fabulous. That's just a wonderful, wonderful park. I've never gone there and not seen eagles, deer, and raccoon.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Kathleen.
Oh, it's fabulous. I also think we need to mention our state trails. We have biking and hiking trails all along in the Chippewa Valley, connecting all the rivers. So it's just a beautiful, beautiful place.
Well, that's on my list now. What about you, Dan Karcher?
Yeah, now, if I'm remembering correctly, that Interstate Park is part of the St. Croix National Scenic Riverway, not that far from the Twin Cities.
I think they touch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I have traveled there, and oh, boy, there you go, another bi-coastal state. You've got Lake Michigan and Green Bay and all that on the eastern side, and then the St. Croix National Scenic Riverway and the Mississippi on the western side of your state. But that is just a beautiful, beautiful area.
We are bragging about some of the wonderful parklands in Wisconsin, but all over the Midwest as well. Our guest is the author of Parklands of the Midwest, Celebrating the Natural Wonders of America's Heartland. He is Dan Karcher, founding editor-in-chief of Midwest Living. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Looking for your recommendations of parks or parklands that you would like to recommend. What's your favorite and why? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Kathleen Dunn has the day off, but I'll be in after 9 o'clock talking with a guest who says that money can indeed make us happy. And she says, contrary to popular belief, so can a lot of other things, lots of food, shopping. She's the author of The Myth of Happiness, The Happiness Myth. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about great parks that you can visit in the Midwest, right here in Wisconsin, but also Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Ohio. Our guest visited many parks in the entire Midwest. His new book, Parklands of the Midwest, features more than 130 parks, and we are welcoming your recommendations, too. Jamie in Lake Geneva, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to mention Devil's Lake State Park in central Wisconsin. I know we're harping on Wisconsin a little bit, but I lived in Colorado for 12 years. I grew up in Wisconsin, but Devil's Lake is just like a slice of Colorado. It's got world-class rock climbing, a beautiful crystal-clear lake, and one of the best things about it is the taking the Merrimack Ferry across the Wisconsin River just to get to it.
Dan Karcher?
Yeah, it sounds like a winner. And, of course, I believe that's near the Wisconsin Dells area that is so frequently visited. But escaping to a nice, quiet state park that isn't commercialized sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jamie. I thought you were going to talk about Devil's Lake, which is quite a busy park, isn't it?
Oh, Devil's Lake State Park, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That,
I thought
is that what I said.
I didn't hear that. I just heard. I heard Dan say that it was escaping to a quiet park.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
You know, one thing about the parks is picking the right time to visit. And one thing I learned on my trip is if you go at the right time of year to a really popular park, you can appreciate it more, such as the autumn or the early spring, or even in the winter. The parks are a great place to go. One of the big things parks offer you is solitude and just time for reflection, and that can be had at the off-season as well as during the busy times.
Thanks, Jamie, for the call. Fanny and Caroline? Fanny, you're on the air. Where are you?
I'm up near Caroline, Wisconsin.
I've never heard of Caroline. Is that?
I'm up here in Shawano County.
Okay, I know where that is.
Yes, mm-hmm. We're just west of Shawano.
Okay, welcome.
And good morning, Joy and Dan.
Morning.
I would like to mention a place that my husband and I stopped just a year ago, and just east of Des Moines, Iowa, right where Dan is, the Neil Smith National Wildlife Refuge. Now, this is an amazing acreage, 5,600 acres of restored prairie. So it's a different kind of a national park down there. And they have an amazing educational center down there. You can go and learn all about the history of the prairies, and then you can hike or take a driving trail around there. Have you ever been there,
Dan? Have you ever been there, Dan?
Well, yippee. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's one of the featured parks in my book.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was one of the 40 I visited around the region and one of three here in Iowa. But Neil Smith is phenomenal. It's named for a former congressman who was much beloved here in central Iowa. And believe it or not, that property originally was going to be dedicated for use as a nuclear power plant. And then environmentalists and park activists got in the act, and even though it's called the Neil Smith National Wildlife Refuge, and it has buffalo and elk and all kinds of other neat critters, the big focus of that parkland is restoration of the prairie. It's the biggest effort nationally to restore the Midwest prairies to what they looked like prior to European settlement. And in Iowa, in particular, that's a big deal because so much of our land, more than 99%, has been plowed under from the native prairies to become cornfields and soybean fields. It's a very inspiring place to visit, and I agree with you. They have a phenomenal visitor center.
Thank you very much, Fanny, for the call. Now I have another one on my list. You did mention, I was checking out Kansas, of all things. I have a sister who lives in Lawrence, Kansas. And I didn't realize that Kansas was a mecca for bird watchers.
Well, yeah. And by the way, your sister lives in a great town in its own right. Lawrence is such a great, funky town. That's more in northeastern Kansas. Mm-hmm. I visited the Great Bend area right in the middle of Kansas in the bend that's formed by what they call the Arkansas River. Some other people would call it the Arkansas River if you happen to be in another state. But here we have saltwater marshes where this high salinity that's in the soil because this at one time was the bottom of an ocean has created marshes that attract birds from all over the country that are on a flyway going between as far as Siberia in the north and as far as Patagonia in the south. I spent a few days there bird watching and just couldn't believe it. You know, I'm not an Audubonner with a long list of personal birds I've seen, but I jotted down at least 25 or 30 varieties, and a lot of them are what's called shorebirds, birds that you'd see by the ocean. And they're right in the middle of Kansas making their annual trip north or south and stopping there in these saltwater marshes. One is Quivira National Wildlife Refuge, and the other is Cheyenne Bottoms State Preserve. They're very close to each other.
Now, we're not running out of time, but we haven't talked at all about our neighbors in Minnesota, I don't think. Can you give me a recommendation of a nice place to visit in Minnesota?
Well, I had three great stops there, and they were very contrasting, too. If you go to the Twin Cities, just over the St. Croix River there from your home state of Wisconsin, the Grand Rounds National Scenic Byway right in the Twin Cities is the only urban national scenic byway, and it knits together things like the old flour milling sites on the Mississippi River, Minnehaha Falls, which is right in Minneapolis, and then those great lakes on the west side of Minneapolis. So it's a wonderful drive of about 25, 30 miles in the city, but through some beautiful areas. Went to Itasca State Park, northwest of the Twin Cities, which is the home of the Mississippi River. And just fascinating to walk across the Mississippi on some stones I was balancing myself on. And we know that it goes from being just maybe 10 feet wide up there as it leaves Lake Itasca to hundreds of yards wide when you're down at New Orleans. Then I spent most of my time at a national park on the Canadian border, Voyageurs National Park, which, again, combines all the history of the Voyageurs that were trading for fur between Montreal and the Northwest, and those pristine lakes, just unbelievable up there. Did some fishing, saw some wildlife, hiking, and canoeing, and houseboating is the big thing there. If you're into houseboating, those lakes are just perfect for it.
Next, we go to Walt, and I'm sorry, Walt, where are you from?
Kashkanan, Joy.
Oh, okay.
Good morning, Joy and Dan. Right, I would like to recommend a couple parks in Jefferson County for people who may be traveling through and visiting southern Wisconsin. The first one is our township park, Mushkosidae Park, in the town of Kashkanan. And that's a park that's 52 acres that the township bought along with stewardship funds a few years ago and is working to restore it to what it might be like, would have been like for the earlier settlers when they got here. So it's native habitat. It's 52 acres and roughly a third woodland, which is being restored, part of that to an oak savanna. Then about 20 or more acres of three-year-old prairie, which is coming along great, and it's good for viewing this year. It's going to be flowering very soon right now and so on. And then a couple of wetlands, an ephemeral wetland and another regular wetland, and we have a viewing deck which gets people kind of up close. And for instance, we think we're doing we're having some success here because I had a report of 16 hooded merganser babies coming out of the nest box and taking off with their mother. So that's doing good. We've got bluebird boxes that are full of bluebirds this year. And so that's a great park, and you can get there. It's south of Fort Atkinson, a mile or so off of Highway K. And if you want to visit, you can go to our website, which is www.kashkananwi.com, and that would be spelled KOSHKONONGWI.com, and that will give you directions to the park and some photographs to check out.
Excellent. What's the name of the park again?
It's called Mushkosidae Park.
Okay. All right. Was there anything else, Walt?
There's one. If I can take one more moment, we're going to have an event there on July 7th called Odyssey of Nature with a number of presenters featuring, headlining, Diane Mahler, who is a raptor rehabilitator locally, and she will have a couple of raptors, hawks, which can't be released. They don't have the physical ability to survive. So she'll have those along for her presentation. As well as bird walks and insect presentations and natural history of the park. And there's about 10 presenters. It's going to be a great day. The other park that I really want to mention quickly is a county park just west of Fort Atkinson on Highway 12, just off of Highway 12, and that's called Dorothy Carnes Park. And that's likewise mostly a wildlife viewing natural area. Prairie is a little older, and they've got a large wetland, Rose Lake, and a beautiful woodlands, and a very nice pavilion, and they have facilities there. The Mushkosidae Park is a primitive park; it doesn't have facilities. But those are two parks I really recommend for people coming through our area to check out what the natural history is like here.
Yeah. All right, Walt. Do you work on the Chamber of Commerce or anything?
No, I'm on the park committee here. I've been a town supervisor, and we've been working on this park, you know, pretty much nonstop for several years to get it up to shape, but it's really coming along.
It sounds wonderful. Thank you very much for sharing that. A reaction, Dan
Carter? Well, it sounds like I've got more parks to add to my list to check out there. But, you know, on another level, Walt is such a great example of something I talk about in my book, and that is I referred earlier to the funding challenges that our parks are facing, and it's a big threat. And people like Walt and these phenomenal volunteers are making the difference, both in terms of the time they're devoting, promoting the parks, speaking up when development issues come up, and then just donating money to keep things going. You know, he couldn't be a better example of the type of person that's more and more going to be shouldering the responsibility for keeping our parks in shape in the years to come, I believe.
Next, we go to Lynn in Blue Mounds, the community of Blue Mounds. Right, Lynn?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you for taking my call. I moved up here from the Quad Cities, and right now I'm reading a book on Blackhawk. And I think you mentioned Native Americans earlier in the program.
Mm-hmm.
And for a small, very small park right in the middle of a lot of cities and that sort of thing, Blackhawk State Park in Rock Island is just a beautiful location. I guess you couldn't say it's thousands of acres and things like that. But knowing that it has historical significance, It is a beautiful spot, and it's right on the Rock River, and there are some bluffs that are overlooking it. And when you go there, there's a kind of a peace and serenity, and you can understand what drew those people to that area and why they made that a huge center of their whole population. And the book that I'm reading right now is giving a wonderful historical background to the whole area. And it's just, I think it kind of points out that parks don't have to be huge and grand. They can be small, but they can still have a lot of meaning.
Yeah, that's right, Dan Karcher.
Yeah, I visited a lot of pocket-sized parks, if you will. I've heard of the park that your caller referred to. And they can come in all kinds of shapes, too. You know, one of the parks I enjoyed so much, anybody who's a bicyclist would enjoy the Katy Trail, which goes for 225 miles across the state of Missouri, and it's only a couple of hundred feet wide. The manager refers to it as the longest, skinniest park in the nation. But it's just fun discovering these places. Also, you know, Chief Blackhawk is so big to the history of Wisconsin, Illinois, and Iowa. There's another park that that brings to mind in central Illinois, Starved Rock, which I bet a lot of your listeners have visited. A lot of Native American history there. And
Where is that in Illinois?
Used. Starved Rock, right in the middle of Illinois on I-80.
Okay.
And it is a busy park, again. But if you go at the right time of year, you're not going to encounter the crowds. But it's full of canyons and ravines. It's on the Illinois River. Eagles there in the wintertime. And spectacular foliage in the fall. A great lodge, as so many of these parks have lodges built by the WPA or the CCC back in the 30s and are still well-maintained.
Thanks again, Lynn. We're going to try to get in a couple of more calls. Tony in Mount Horeb. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning.
Yes.
Stop me if we've gone through these parks. I came in about halfway through. We did a little tour in Indiana of three state parks, Spring Mill, Brown County. They have CCC buildings as well, and there's 300- and 400-year-old trees down at Spring Mill, 1820s Grist Mill, fantastic park, very woodsy and hilly, as you know, in southern Indiana. As well as their newest state park, Prophetstown, in the northern part of the state.
Wow.
Near
We're going through so many of them, Tony, and we don't have much time. But since we didn't really talk about anything much in Indiana, Dan Karcher, what about Spring Mill or something else?
I'm calling that right off the top of my head, but I'll tell you, I spent a lot of time in Hoosier National Forest and the two Lincoln parks because he was a boy there in southern Indiana. And then, of course, Indiana Dunes right near Chicago. Great state for parks again, especially the hilly, wooded part of Indiana, I would say, is my favorite part of that state.
Well, it's been fun, and I have a lot more places to visit on my list. Dan Karcher, thanks a lot for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dan Karcher is editor-in-chief or founding editor-in-chief of Midwest Living. He just retired after 20 years with the magazine. He has a new book out, Parklands of the Midwest, celebrating the natural wonders of America's heartland.